Hi there, it's Jennifer Jones, your host here on Let's Think About It, where we explore the life and experiences of neurohospitalists, a relatively new subspecialty of neurology. This episode is about the schedule. I talked to a couple of my colleagues about the neurohospitalist schedule and how it's made and what it feels like to work it. First, I talked to my colleague, Dr. Jenny Savage, about how she approaches making the schedule for the seven of us docs. Then I talked to one of our newest advanced practitioners, Catherine Rogers, about how she's acclimated to our schedule and some of the pros and cons of this type of work. In any profession, one invariably runs up against the reality that the job owns you. In life as a neurohospitalist, where frequent chunks of time off, as long as a week, are incorporated, there can be an illusion that you have more control over the schedule than you really do. For me anyway, going to a hospitalist schedule of 15 shifts per month from the traditional outpatient office schedule, roughly Monday through Friday with weekends off, somehow felt like I was going to have time to explore a whole side hustle or even just be available for the kids. Somehow thinking about working 15 shifts per month sounded like a lot more freedom, 1 week on and 1 week off as it should work out. But in truth, our schedules include 5 night shifts. Those are 14-hour shifts, and they impact both the day prior, the night of, and the following day. So they can claim a good 24 to 48 hours of your life. And during a week of working 7 days, any side projects at home, learning pickleball or the ukulele, reorganizing the kitchen, painting a room, acquiring a new friend, it all takes a hiatus in service of the day-to-day survival during a work week. Basically, I think that there's no way around the idea that there are only so many hours in a day and so many days in a life. We all have to make choices of how we spend those hours. And in work as a neurohospitalist, as in work in any other field, there is no way around the idea that the work you commit to will take your time. And as Annie Dillard wrote in The Writing Life, how we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. What we do with this hour and that one is what we are doing. So, with that in mind, let's go to my interviews with Dr. Jenny Savage and Catherine Rogers, PA. Okay, hi, this is Jennifer Jones, and I'm here talking to my colleague, Dr. Jenny Savage, who has been working with us for 7 years on the inpatient, came from Oregon, right?
Yep.
And then you came straight out of your residency?
So I did a neurophys fellowship at UVA, and then worked 2 years in a hospital-based practice that was mainly outpatient with some inpatient for a couple of years before coming here.
Oh, okay. And so today we're going to talk about all the components that go into the scheduling and life as a neurohospitalist on this schedule. Not entirely life, because that's a bit too comprehensive. And you make our schedule.
I do.
Okay. So what kind of sadomasochist do you have to be to do that?
There's good and bad, right? I mean, it's good because you can control when your time off is, right?
Yes.
So I like that part.
Yeah. And so one of my questions that I have for you is that I don't see you taking great advantage of that, like giving yourself preference. If anything, you probably are like harder on yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're doing the schedule. You don't want to appear to favor yourself. And so you actually like disadvantage yourself.
Maybe. I don't know. It is easy though when you see a hole and you're like, oh, I could just put myself in there. I'll just take that shift. You know,
yes,
it's easy to do that. So
well, yeah, you definitely do that. So I wanted to ask, what do you do to approach the schedule making, like a bottle of scotch, a night of insomnia, you know, a big fight with somebody? What do you have to do to sit down and knock it out?
So I typically try and do it when I'm on call, which is sometimes not the best idea, but
like
you really do need
night.
Quiet night where it's like, you know, 10 o'clock at night or something, and you hopefully it'll be relatively quiet.
Yeah.
And you have like a couple hours to just sit down and do the whole thing. Because once you get started, it's hard to stop when you're doing the counts, and then trying to go back and do it is really challenging. So
I can imagine. I mean, anything, that's why I always feel when I bring anything in to do on call,
you know,
that requires some focus, because you can never commit to it.
Yeah.
And then so is there some kind of pleasure that happens, like, you know, like when you're looking at Magic Eye or something and all of a sudden all the thing comes to be 3D and you're like, I see it.
Yes. Yeah. The pattern at the end, it's like, oh, this looks really good. Like this person has a really good pattern in terms of like days or nights or time off. And
yeah,
it's like at the end, you can kind of scroll through and like see everyone's schedule and make sure everyone looks like they have kind of a good pattern over the next few months.
So our schedule involves having 2 doctors on every day, at least, and 1 doctor every night.
And we're increasingly needing another doctor every day, what we call the ninja. And then our two doctors who are on cover, one covers the ICU, which we call the Piska list, and one covers the Mitchell list, which is the neuro floor patients, more or less. And then the ninja doctor would take the calls like you're doing today for code strokes or outside calls and other consults. So how do you do it when you're scheduling? Like, tell me about your strategy. So 6 week blocks, you have people's vacation request.
Yeah. I typically start from, I guess, the vacation request and work backwards. Cause I feel like that's sort of the really cool thing about being a hospitalist is that you can sort of choose when your time off is. And it's, I think, maybe easier than clinic, like trying to rearrange patients or, so I think, if you need a random Monday off to go see your kids' baseball game or whatever, it's easy. So I want everyone to get the time off because I think that's the biggest benefit of our schedule, sort of. And so I kind of work backwards, which I think if we had more people, you could maybe do a block schedule, but with only six or seven of us, it's really tough to know when you would need time or so. I don't know. I think if it's a smaller group, you have to kind of, in order for everyone to get their vacation time, that has to sort of be the priority.
Right. And so then so you start with that. And start then with start that. Plugging in.
Yeah. Like if I know that I wanted a week off in August, I might say, okay, well, I'm going to make sure that my 7 days in a row is at the end of the month because I need off in the beginning of the month, or if you need off a week, I try and think of that, of where you're going to have your bigger chunks of shift work so that you can have that week off.
I see. And then how about when there's any conflict about anybody who, like spring breaks, for example, when everybody is wanting the same shifts off?
Yeah, I think we're pretty lucky that the spring breaks have sort of staggered out somehow.
Are different ages.
Yeah, the different ages. Stuff, yeah. Alex's kids are now in college, so he's not worried with spring break. And a couple of the people that we work with don't have kids yet. So I was like, they're definitely working that 7 day stretch on spring break, you know, so that they can fill that in. And then if there are times where there's multiple requests and I try and if everyone wanted off that certain week, maybe you'd work that first weekend, but then have 5 days off on the back half. And then someone else would have 5 days off in the front half and have to work that weekend maybe. So try and kind of make it even. Yeah. Even it out that way.
And we're a pretty collegial group too. So we'll usually kind of all work together
Definitely.
And see what we can make happen. And then I guess you'd probably just give it to whoever you like best every time. Oh yeah. The other things I was thinking about is how it must be kind of challenging. Like Robbie needs to do a little bit more ICU time.
Yep. Right. Yeah. So he's our ICU trained doc and he does pretty much almost all ICU, which I think is great because he's got that specialized training. And so he's kind of coming behind all of us who are not ICU fellowship trained and can help with those complicated patients. So I think that's a good thing to have. But that does throw a little, not like a wrench, but it does make the schedule a little more complicated. And then one of our other colleagues does some EEG time. And so that's another carve out of the schedule. But I don't know, it seems to somehow magically just kind of come into place.
Yeah,
at some
point. You do a
I don't
good
know.
Job
it's somehow
it.
It just all works out.
Yeah. But it does seem like such an inordinate process, and then because each of us needs to be on the inpatient or the ICU variably so that we're not always doing the same one. We need to work with different people sometimes. Yeah. You don't want to always be on with the same crew, and feels like it's probably really complicated.
Yeah, I think I do think there are patterns. Like if I do 3 or 4 months in a row, you end up working with kind of two or three people, I feel like, during that block of time. And then I try in the next block sort of switch it up at the beginning, because once you're in that pattern of you work a week, 7 days in a row, you need some time off, or you might switch to nights. And then it just naturally, when you go back on days, it tends to be a couple people that are still able to do days that week. So you do kind of end up paired up. Yeah, somehow it all
did you do the out. Did you do your schedule in your residency and
yeah, I did.
Yeah.
You were chief. I was chief the last year. Yeah. So I did the schedule that last year. Yeah.
What would the ideal situation be for the schedule for you? Like, would we just need more people to make it easier?
Yeah, I think we would just need more people. Like, ideally, having three docs on during the day would be amazing, to have one person covering the pager.
Yeah.
And the other two can just round and have kind of a more calm day. And then I do think we need two people at night, which would be really, really beneficial.
Just really. And I don't know why when we have it fully covered and it feels like a manageable day, I almost feel guilty.
Oh, I know. Last week we had an extra person on every day of the week. And I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, I feel, you do, you feel guilty and you feel kind of like, I shouldn't have this downtime. But then all you have to do is have a busy shift, and then you're like, oh no, I totally did deserve that. You know, like we all deserve to like be able to have a 30-minute lunch break or sit down together.
I was going to say downtime can be like having lunch.
Having lunch. And we're talking about cases, and it's actually good for our patients to like have us collaborating and having time to be together and bounce ideas off each other, I think is
And even
really
with
helpful.
The three here, sometimes the person on the first call, you know, for the ER has to get help because they're coming in multiple at once. Yeah, I agree. It's just staffing. But I guess we just staff for like barely contingent, you know, we're just not staffed for like any redundancy.
Yeah.
If anybody goes out sick, we all just have to scramble.
That was challenging with COVID.
Yeah.
And I think, I guess we were sort of lucky in that maybe only one or two of us got sick, but I do remember being like, well, you know, we got to figure it out. Like someone's got to be here, you know, which is hard when there's only six of you, or at one point there was only five of us.
Yeah.
And that was wild.
Yeah. And I remember when my mom was sick and I had to call in sort of last minute, not realizing the gravity of it one night. And, you know, within a few hours, we have no backup contingency really, you know?
Yeah. There's been times, not to give too much information, but like throwing up in the call room, you know, just because you're sick and it doesn't hit until midnight or something. And you're just like, oh gosh, there's no one to call to like
nothing
come
you
cover.
Can do. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of that's sort of the attitude in medicine, isn't it? Like
is.
A little bit of this, like, if you're not walking around
with
an IV pole,
then
you're going to be here. So you worked in a clinic before you came here?
Yeah.
And so that was like a Monday through Friday kind of thing?
It was Monday through Friday. And then we had kind of a rotation where you would spend a week doing inpatient. And then we also had kind of like a procedure week where you would do EMG, EEG, and you would interpret all of the heads. We did radiology, so we'd interpret all the head CTs. Mm-hmm. And then when you were on call once every five nights, maybe, which was really challenging because you'd be interpreting all the CT scans from the emergency department overnight, and then you'd have a full day of clinic the next day, which I love about our schedule here is like, you know, 5:01, you clock out, someone else is coming in, can help you, and you have like that night off to recover and sleep before you come back in. Or if you work a night shift, you're not expected to come and work a full day post-call, which is what you do, I feel like, when you're in a more private type practice. And, you know, so that was a big draw for me to switch over. I really loved the hospital side of it when I was at the other practice, and I realized I did not love clinic as much. And so, and the schedule, you know, doing the shift work was a big draw for me.
Yeah. And I feel the same way. I feel like it's sort of an unfair situation for outpatient because they're working Monday through Friday typically.
Yeah.
Then they have to cover some weekends, some nights. That's how it was for me outpatient. Getting a vacation, like you said, is
like
possible, but
advance,
you have to schedule
it
6 months in advance.
Yeah.
Getting off in the last minute for your children or something is also similarly impossible. Just seems like the two are not even comparable.
Yeah. I think if you do a outpatient clinic, what I learned from that, I was like, you just really need to schedule either a day or a half day of like admin time where you can make phone calls and you just have some buffer built into your schedule, which we did not have, you know, because it's all, we were RVU based, which does put kind of more of a hustle and everyone's trying to fill your clinic and so that you can get compensated, but
and the demands in the community are
huge.
Insatiable most everywhere almost.
Yeah. So I really like that about hospitalist work is that you can just come in, you do your shift, and then you go home and you know that someone incredibly capable is coming in and can cover all the stuff that happens in the middle of the night. You know, they can cover that.
Yeah.
And so I really like that about our schedule and how it, and I like having days off during the week. I mean, I had Monday, Tuesday off this week, and I like took my kids to school. I took them to like basketball practice and got to go to their games. Like, you know, I mean, you get some time off during the week, which I think is, you don't think you're going to, I didn't think I would like that as much as I actually do.
Oh, I find that so valuable. I mean, those hours when the kids are at school, when you're at home.
It's amazing.
And if
like
you
clean
work
the
a
house,
regular,
I like baked bread. doing like
and you
stuff
get,
at your house.
If you work a regular job, Monday through Friday, like the typical thing, you just would never
have that. Yeah.
And now I, having done this for a little while, I don't even know how I wouldn't do it.
I know.
I get really mad if the kids are staying home.
Yes. Summer's hard, right? I do feel like summer's really hard when the kids are home. Cause then it's like, even too, if like you work at night, you're trying to come home and sleep and the kids are in the house and their friends are over.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a different,
Yeah.
Like definitely when the school year starts, it's like, oh, it's good.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so what about sleep after a call night? How are you with that? Can you go home and sleep?
I do. I typically sleep from like 8 to 11. Yeah. So it's not, I don't know. Some people can sleep till like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. I've never been able to do that. I can sleep 3 or 4 hours typically.
Right, that's about the same for me.
And then I kind of feel like, too, I want to get up and have some time before I come back into the hospital. So sometimes I'll try and work out or just, yeah, hang out with the kids or whatever it is and before coming back in. So
yeah. And how about nights in general? Do you like them or?
I think it's kind of a love-hate relationship. I like being in-house. I think that's great. I did a, not, we didn't do in-house call at my old job, and I did not like splitting, like getting paged at home when you're in your space with your family and having to get pulled away. That was terrible. So yeah. I think it's hard to come like in-house call because you're, I mean, you're physically not at home at all. Like, so you do have to have someone at home to help with everything else, but it's very nice to, I think, just be here and just
I
know
agree.
It's a shift and just you're here. Anything that comes in, you can just deal with it.
It used to be so distressing going back and forth when you had to come in when we were trying to do it from home. It was
I can't
so
imagine.
Upsetting.
Yeah.
And then you kind of half think, well, maybe I won't have to go in.
Right.
And you do
and
every
always
time.
Do.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I don't mind night call. You know, I mean, the things that happen at 3 and 4 in the morning are always painful. But
yeah. But there can be something nice and it's a different pace and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. You have a little more time. You're on your own too, which is sort of, can be sort of nice. I mean, you just kind of like take your time on stuff and you don't have to round on people. So you have that time to chart and do a little more literature search or, you know, whatever you're trying to do. So I think that is good.
Yeah.
You don't feel as rushed.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. So what do you love about the hospitalist schedule, like a neuro hospitalist schedule? And what's great about it? What stinks about it?
Let's see. I love the great things about it are that you can plan and manage your own time. Like it's not like a 20-minute follow-up visit. Like you can spend as much time with the patient as you want, as much time with family members, and then be more efficient on ones that don't need as much and they're just waiting for discharge or something like that.
Like you
that.
Just
so
got your list at the beginning of the day and how long it takes you is up to you and the patient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that about it. Things that are challenging is that I think it can get incredibly busy when there are a lot of emergencies all at once. And when they all happen at, you know, 4:45 p.m. when you're getting ready to leave, it's just painful.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are days we're not signing out at 5:01.
Exactly. Yes. Those are days where you're here till 7 or 8 o'clock at night,
right.
You know, sometimes, which can be hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like kind of the autonomy you have about planning your time. And I like how it's new, like every day is new. You don't know what you're walking into, which can sometimes be stressful. Like the night before, you're like, oh gosh, like what is the next day going to be like? But I also love that because it's never boring and it's never the same thing. Each day is totally different, which I love. I think that makes you have a lot more job satisfaction.
Yeah. And when you have to look things up or start thinking about weird zebra diagnoses
stuff.
And then we were talking recently about like other jobs that might not have the same rhythm, like when you get to work and you open the list and maybe you're already getting calls from nurses and you don't know the patients yet. And you might get a new consult from the ER and you're just trying to get to know the 20 or 40 patients on your own list. And that can be so hectic and it can feel just like putting out fires all day. But then at the end of the day, you're kind of done and you pass it on, like we were talking about, to somebody else. And then you come back the next day, you might know the list a little bit better. But I was just thinking about like other jobs where you wouldn't have just everything all at once, you know, like we were saying, like if you were, say a baker or
that would be nice.
And even a fireman,
right.
doesn't have 1,000 fires all at once.
Yeah.
So that's hard. I think that's a hard
part
of it.
I feel like it's like when you have a newborn where it's like you're either overwhelmed and there's tons going on or the baby's asleep and you're totally bored. You know, it's like I shouldn't say it's never, but it is, I think, hard to find that like perfect stride of like, oh, it's just the right amount of work and I'm feeling like, you know, I can handle everything. And I feel like it's a lot of times it's you're either feeling maxed out or you're like, oh, I'm just waiting for a new consult to come and I'm just, you know,
just sitting here
like
doing a podcast,
whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Every afternoon when it's quiet,
coming to you live. There's nothing going on at Mission Hospital.
Right, right. Okay, good, good. What are some funny things that you do in the room when you're not busy?
Yoga.
Okay.
I do yoga.
How do you get the yoga? Oh, like just in front of the sink?
Just in front of the sink. I have a yoga mat.
There's barely any room.
There's no room. There's no room. So it's kind of funny. It's like, what am I doing in here? Like, you know, in this tiny room trying to do yoga. But yeah. It's awesome. Like, I feel like when I actually do it, it's like, it feels really good to like have done something separate than work.
Yeah.
For that 20 minutes.
And now
whatever.
We have a Peloton
bike.
In there.
Yeah.
And I am impressed that you do it.
I sometimes do, which you just sort of have to like, you know, fingers crossed, you don't get a stroke and end up like just dripping in sweat going to a coach. Yeah. People are like, are you having a heart attack? Like, what's happening to my neurologist?
Having a delusion that I was wet and soaked with sweat. Seems confused.
Seems confused. But I will say that has like definitely increased my job satisfaction at night. Just
yeah.
Like feeling like, because a 14-hour shift is really long. I mean, that's a
it
long
is.
Shift. And I feel like if you can work out or break it up somehow, that's helpful.
And it's so, it's sort of torment in the beginning of the night if it's all quiet.
Yes.
And you're just sitting there knowing something's coming. I mean, I would say one out of 10, it might be less, are nights where we don't actually get like a new patient to see.
Yeah.
Just some calls or something. Right. You think that's
yeah.
about right? Like very rarely will we get no patients.
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes, yeah, you'll be hanging around for hours and then all of a sudden 9:30 at night or 11 o'clock at night, you get five things,
yeah.
you know, and that's
yeah.
always hard. So I feel like working out has helped me just reduce that stress of
yeah.
like, I don't know.
What about reading? There's those weird books in the call room.
I typically don't read. I do watch like home improvement shows.
Yeah.
Like, I like just like crappy TV, you know,
yeah,
just
yeah.
something really easy. Like sometimes I've watched like more like dramatic series and stuff. And
do you watch it on your phone?
I watch it on a little iPad.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But I think that has like, sometimes that's almost stressful. Like I just need like fluffy, easy
right.
stuff that you can turn on and off. It's not too
right.
like deep or heavy.
What about doing anything like Wordle or Spelling Bee or crossword puzzles?
I don't do any
that's not anything. Okay.
No.
What about any kind of drawing, painting?
I used to.
Yeah.
I used to bring stuff in and just kind of, I remember I made one of the kids' Halloween costumes while I was on call once.
Yeah,
like I brought in
yeah.
like a glue gun and anyway, I was doing all these like crafts, but, and that was actually really fun, but
yeah.
that's not something I normally.
I like that too. Yeah. I'll occasionally bring in something creative,
yeah.
like drawing or mandolin to play. Not a mandolin, a ukulele.
Yeah,
and,
fun.
You know, like a little
mm-hmm.
instrument or whatever, but then it gets frustrating if you get too committed.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, the
yeah.
commitment of then getting pulled away from something is
yeah.
is challenging, I think. But
yeah.
the time somehow just kind of cruises by.
That was Dr. Jenny Savage, one of our 7 neurohospitalists and the person who makes our schedules and hence controls our entire lives. In my next interview, I talked to Catherine Rogers, PA, at the end of a 7-day work week that we got through together. The days can be intense, but by the end of a week, there is an intangible efficiency that is unique to this kind of scheduling, both amongst team members who've been on all week together and with the patients whose clinical courses you've become intimately familiar with. Catherine is a PA, so let's just talk about the general schedule.
Yeah, so here at Mission Hospital, we are like required to work a certain number of shifts. And so every schedule is kind of varying. So some weeks you work 7 10-hour shifts in a row and then you get a nice chunk off. Other weeks are you're working 4 or 5. So it's always 10-hour shifts, but the spread kind of varies.
All right, and so so you're just however many shifts a month
mm-hmm.
and then that generally works out to, for us anyway, it works out to like 1 week for sure, 1 solid 7-day week, and then the same, like sometimes there's some nights which you don't have necessarily or some shorter days and what have you.
So where I came from previously was a little bit more strict about how the schedule had to be. So you had to work either 3 or 4 shifts a week. If you were working like a week of 13s, it meant you had to work 3 shifts. If you were working a week of 10s, it was 4 shifts, so all equating to 40 hours, just kind of in a different spread. And I think in the beginning, I was like, oh, I'm gonna wanna do 3 13s because I only have to work 3 days. That sounds delightful. And why not? When I started doing it, I started to feel very differently because working 13-hour shifts is draining to a whole other level. And I know you guys do it at night. It's just exhausting. And so you'd work those 3:13s, you'd get home and you would need to recover for like 2 days because you were so tired and you had to catch up on everything you didn't do because you can't do anything when you're working until 8:30 at night and then have to drive home. And so I didn't prefer that. Other people love it. It just wasn't for me. I think if maybe the day started earlier and I was home by 7, I would feel differently. But with how our schedule was, it wasn't that way. And so that one was a lot more strict in the sense that within your like pay period, so every 2 weeks, you had to meet your 80 hours. So like you couldn't push, like, okay, I can only work four days this week and 2 days the next week. You had to still meet your 80 hours in those 2 weeks. Versus here, it's a lot more flexible. So you can work 7 days straight. You will get paid what you are owed. And then the next week, you don't have to work at all. You only work 2 days or whatever works. And I do appreciate that flexibility. Working 7 days straight is not my favorite thing, but you kind of, you get used to it.
And like, I agree. It's so hard. The 7 days,
yeah.
We're both finishing a 7-day week right now.
Yes, we are.
And it's like it's almost for the rest of your life as if you're out of town.
Yes.
I have a hard time keeping up with things at home,
yes.
Emails, plans outside of work.
Yes, getting the mail. Like,
but there's an efficiency here at work that is just, you can't get in shorter periods of work.
No, and I also like it because by the end, even though you've been here for, you know, 7 days in a row, you know all the patients, everyone knows you're going to be here. It becomes easier versus I do find that I have a harder time like coming back to work after having like a break. Like even if it's like I've worked 4 days and then I'm off 3 and then I'm back for 4, I find that to be tough sometimes because you're in your schedule and then you're out of your schedule and then you're back in it. And being in it for 7 days, you get that done and you're kind of like, huh, okay, I can actually like take a minute, really step away, have a break, and then come back and be ready to kind of do it again. So I think it provides like a good work-life balance. Like I do think it helped me to have a better work-life balance being here.
Being on for 7 and then off for 7.
Yeah, and I mean even like the scheduling in general of how some weeks I can work 5 days and then I can work 3 the next. Like it just having that flexibility means that you're not locked in. And so also if something happens and there's an emergency and you have to miss a shift, you can like come in and make it up whenever. And
right.
I do like that.
So your ideal schedule would be 7 on, 7 off. You would prefer that? Or do you like the mix up a little?
I like the mix up because so when I first started the 7 on, I couldn't do. Like I did it obviously because it was a new job and that's what I was told to do. But it like at the beginning I was like, oh no, I am not used to this. I don't know what this is like. And now as months have gone on and I do them intermittently. I've done like, since I kind of stepped away from that schedule, I've still done 2 in like this month, and then I did 1 in October, and it wasn't as bad. Like, I think you do kind of get used to it. And
if you just set your expectations at the beginning.
You know, and as long as there is, like, a nice little chunk off, it makes it okay. Like, if you're doing 7 on, and then you're off for, like, 2 days, and you're back, that doesn't work. But having, like, an extended period, I don't mind doing it, especially to have, like, a big chunk off, like, getting to go home for the holidays.
Yeah.
And having that thing to look forward to makes getting through those 7 shifts a little bit easier.
Yeah, for sure. And then the shifts are 10 hours.
10 hours. Way prefer the 10-hour shifts.
Yeah, and 13 seems... And those were probably busy shifts, right?
Extremely busy shifts. I mean, in my last role, we were the ones responding to stroke codes. We were rounding on our own, rounding with the attending, then writing notes. And even though, like, we see more patients here, I definitely feel like I do less running around and like less like frantic, oh my God, I have to do this, I have to go to that. Now there's a stroke code, now I'm running here. So
yeah,
I think that it allows for better focus as well.
And you were at an academic center before,
yep.
But this is not academic. So we're just really kind of trying to just get the job done.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, I was even talking to one of my colleagues from my old job messaged me today and she was like, how many patients did you see today? Like, we're trying to figure out what we're going to do because our system isn't working right now. And so I was giving ideas from what we do here to try to help them because they have more people, but how they have it set up now it doesn't work as efficiently.
With residents and mm-hmm. fellows and stuff, right, yeah. right. Yeah, in a way, they're supposed to help make things efficient, but
yeah, but it's not always that case. Like, yeah. I feel like it was always so fun to work with them, and it was great learning, and it really provided, like, a constant learning. Not that mm-hmm. this isn't, it's just a different, like, way of constantly learning.
Right.
It was slower. I mean, everything was slower, and especially when you get new residents every July who then have to learn everything again when it's your job that you've been doing for however many years. It's tough. Just,
yeah. Frustrating a little.
For
sometimes.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all need to learn, and it's the best way to learn, but it definitely changes the speed and the focus of what you're doing.
Yeah, that's right. So I think some of the things that can be hard, too, that I was going to hope to talk to some family members maybe about, like, how it is to be a partner of somebody
oh, yeah.
who's working this kind of schedule, particularly if you're not a medical person.
I can definitely speak to that.
Yeah.
So my partner is an engineer, so he works a regular 9-to-5, Monday through Friday. In the beginning, it was really tough because we both had to kind of learn that our schedules were different and that we had different expectations of what our days off would be, because he only has a Saturday and a Sunday versus, depending on my schedule, I can be off in the middle of the week. And even beyond that, when I would work 13-hour shifts, not being home for dinner, like,
right.
really made a difference. Like, you just didn't have that time. I would get home and we'd be going to bed. Like, that's what it was. It wouldn't be, oh, let's talk about our days. It was like, okay, we got 20 minutes. Okay, brush your teeth, time for sleep. And so it is an adjustment period, especially for people who don't get that. And also, like, working weekends is different, or holidays, you know? Most people don't do that.
Right.
And so it's just, I think communication is a huge part of helping to make that work, and just knowing that it's a part of what we have to do to take care of our patients. And even if it's not, you know, ideal, no one loves working a weekend, no one loves working a holiday. We can be honest. We know
right.
this. But if you have, like, people who you can help get to understand what it's like and know that you're not alone in, like, these feelings, and that it's really tough with someone who doesn't have that same job or have those same expectations, it does get easier as time goes on, I would say.
Like, just making sure you're kind of communicating.
Yeah.
The other thing I remember when I had a partner was that it is also sometimes hard to explain to non-medical people,
totally.
Because I don't know, I think there can be a little bit of pressure, like, why don't you get more help? There's sometimes some insinuation that you're working too hard, or you're being taken advantage of,
yeah.
or you're working too much, or somebody else should be doing something. And it's very hard to explain the culture of medicine, which is, like, basically it's all out all
it
the
is,
time.
All the time. I think you're totally right, because, and even, like, having a business model mindset, like, you take that and it's like, okay, well, these are my things I have to accomplish for the day. And it's like, we come in and our things that we have to accomplish for the day change
yeah.
by the minute sometimes, of who has to be seen, what's critically changing. And I think being able to deal with that is very different than what a normal, you know, regular job
right.
does every day. Like, they know what they accomplish. Oh, I have to go make this happen and send these emails. And that's not what we do every
yeah,
day.
Yeah, you have one project you're working on
long-term. Yeah, extensively.
Long-term,
I can't even understand
yeah.
that. When he's like, oh, I just, you know, I have to accomplish these things at this time. I'm like, you work on this same, oh. And that sounds boring to me.
Right.
Because we come in and every day is a new day.
It's never boring.
Never boring.
It's tiring sometimes,
yeah.
but it's never boring.
Never boring.
Because even in the bread and butter cases, the people are interesting.
Oh, yeah. It's
yeah.
always someone new. It's someone with a different, who's had a different life than you've
families,
ever experienced.
The drama, the
yeah.
interconnection with people.
Yes.
Can be frustrating, but it's not boring.
No, never. Frustrating, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
But interesting. No other job necessarily has this level of interaction with other humans.
Yeah.
From all different walks of life. I love when I get elderly patients and they're these old married couples. I ask every one of them what the secret is. Whenever I, like, meet people who are, like, in their 90s and they've been married for 60 years.
Yeah,
I ask
yeah.
them all every
okay,
time.
Okay, and this might be a good topic for another podcast,
yeah.
but what have you... got the secret?
No, I don't think I have. Some people have, coming from the Northeast to here has been funny, because some people are like, Jesus, we had Jesus in our relationship. And I'm like, Okay, interesting, different, new response.
Maybe there's something common. Maybe just some common shared passion,
like,
or something.
This faith and having faith. Yeah. Great. Other people are just, you know, you really gotta like love each other and want to be there for each other. It's I like to ask that question. One of my friends did it when we were students on a rotation together. And I was like, oh, I like that. When I remember, I try to ask.
That's very good of you, because I'm basically the opposite. I'm like, please don't tell me any of your relationship advice, because it doesn't apply for me. No. You know, I think the other thing that is particularly interesting about our role is that there's some vulnerability for our patients. And so they should trust us. They don't always, but there's a certain kind of vulnerability that they have that makes the encounter a little bit more authentic than maybe it would be if you were working in, say, some other public capacity at a store or something, where you may come in contact with people, but it wouldn't be the kind of authentic communication where you're getting somebody who's in need of something, you're trying to help them, you're applying your skills and knowledge, you know.
Well, and even, I'm sure this is probably from an outpatient to an inpatient perspective, even like I worked in urgent care prior, before working in neurology at all, and the difference between dealing with patients in an urgent care versus here in the hospital when it's like critically ill versus people coming in to be seen, but it's kind of a different, it's a different vibe. It's, I need to be in, I need to be out, I need my note for work, I need this thing, and it doesn't form that bond. And even though we don't necessarily know our patients for a long time or even get to see them for more than 3 or 5 days, you're this person that they look to during this really vulnerable, horrible time, but you're that beacon that kind of is like, it's going to be okay. There is improvement following strokes, you know, it's not going to be like this forever. And they need that, because I think it's also easy to forget that not everyone has the knowledge we have. And like, people don't understand. And a stroke is just this big, scary thing that you hear about. And all of a sudden it's happened to you, and what are you supposed to do?
Right, to give them a roadmap even for their for what to expect, you know.
Yeah.
That's right. And then in an outpatient, you're right, the day, the feel of the day even is completely different, and the expectations of the relationship between provider and patient
and
are
even,
very different.
And for sure, and I felt like even in outpatient there was more of this, and I know all medicine has this like time constraint of, oh, you're supposed to be in and out, see as many patients as you can. I don't really feel that in the inpatient world. I feel it in the sense that there are only so many hours in the day, and we have to get through as many people as we can who need to be seen. But it's not like as like time is money, and you need to see these patients every 15 minutes. So you couldn't form those bonds.
Right. Right. That's right. And then it's up to you when you open the chart and you have a list of patients.
Yeah.
You know, you can take longer with some and shorter with others.
Yeah.
And that's kind of our prerogative, which is very different than a schedule, you know, where you might you've got, you know, 18 patients to see in a day in a clinic, and each one has 20 minutes or something.
Yeah,
you know?
And they have 20 complaints, and they haven't been seen in 2 years.
Yeah, and they couldn't get through to the office, and nobody called in this, and you're going, I've only got so long to spend with you.
Yes.
And here we let them just say what they need to say about how frustrating the hospital is, and then we go, okay. Well,
I'm really sorry.
Talk about
it's
your
not
stroke.
You. I know it's not me. It's okay. You can talk about, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
Is there anything that, from your perspective, having worked in outpatient, the walk-in clinic, and then inpatient neurology, with friends that you might know in other specialties, is your schedule here, does it seem particularly different from what you know about other specialties?
I think the difference here is the flexibility, and like that it's like shifts per month. None of my other friends have shifts per month. Like, they're not obligated to a certain number of shifts to complete their full time. It's 40 hours a week, however they get there. I have friends who work in urgent care still. I have friends who work in an ICU. I have friends who work in surgery. So everyone that I talk to on the PA side of things, because most of my friends are PAs, you know.
Yeah.
We all went to PA school together.
Yeah.
It's trauma bonding, you know, in the best way possible.
Right, right.
And I would say that it's mostly like that they're all salaried. But that means that if they work extra shifts, they don't necessarily get paid.
Right.
And
we don't get paid by productivity. We get paid per shift.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the
and
expectation.
Some have RVUs.
Yeah,
like some of my friends have RVUs. But as far as scheduling goes, like, everyone is either on a like 4 10-hour shifts a week or 3 12 to 13-hour shifts a week, but they are locked in that they have to do those like within that pay period, right, for the most part.
And what about, okay, so what about as an APP, an advanced practitioner provider?
Yep.
What about your relationship with the docs like me? You work very independently. You know, we need, our APPs and you in particular are all extraordinarily well trained and work extraordinarily independently without somebody looking over your shoulder all the time. If there's something confusing or a difficult case, we'll talk about it. But for the most part, you're doing very independent work. Do you think that's the case across with the other friends that you know in other roles, or even in your other experience, were you able to work as independently?
So no, so I think that definitely is role dependent and hospital dependent, depending on if it's a educational, like teaching academic hospital. Also, I think ramping up to that is really important. I definitely did not feel as comfortable being solo when I started in neurology.
Yeah, but you now definitely want to be comfortable.
Yes.
Yeah.
After 2 years, I feel pretty good about most things. And thank you. And so I think that as I look at my friends who work at academic teaching centers, which I have friends who work in Manhattan, I have friends who work in Philly, and they are on a team where there are residents and there are attendings, and you still have kind of that hierarchy, for lack of a better term, of, you know, we round and see the patients, but then you round and talk with the doctor, which is how it was at my previous position, which I enjoyed. I have nothing against. Like I said, it's an amazing way to learn.
Yeah.
And especially coming into neurology, I think it was the best way to learn.
It's like how a resident learns.
Exactly. Yeah. I essentially got to do a stroke focused residency for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And really hone in on that. But I didn't feel like I had really any independence. It was, okay, I'm going to see this patient in the morning. We're going to round and talk about it. And then someone's going to kind of tell me what to do. And I can give suggestions and I can say, you know, I would want to do this and let's start aspirin and Plavix, blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't me. At least it didn't feel like it was me making that decision
right. For
the big things. I mean, you know, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon and the patient's blood pressure is high. I'm not asking someone what to do. But like with those bigger choices, it felt like I didn't make them. And so I like the independence and the autonomy that we have here. And I think it's really, really great. And I feel much more of an equal with you guys here, which I didn't necessarily feel at my last job. And not that I'm saying that I am your equal. I am not. You guys are
phenomenal
doctors.
Well, I think we're all doing the same thing. And, you know, we're all taking care of 70% of strokes and stuff.
Yeah.
And so, and I think the thing about our program that I love also is just the real programmatic aspect of it, that we have monthly meetings.
Yes.
We discuss our changes. You know, we discuss if we're going to change the window of thrombolysis out to 9 hours. Like with the Extend trial, we're kind of doing it collaboratively as a group. You're not going to have one attending doing it and others not, or, you know, and so that we can all work independently and be practicing in a similar, you know, you're going to get a predictable treatment algorithm from everybody.
For sure.
You know, you're not going to get one thing from you and another from me, because we talk about it. Mm-hmm. We see things the same
as a group.
We all
collaborate.
Yeah.
I also like those meetings, because we would do meetings at my previous job, but it was like 50 people on a Zoom with the head of the department, who I don't know very well because I don't practice with them all that often. And it just felt separate from me. Like there was like a degree of separation, and I'm sure COVID also played a role because it was on Zoom. But no matter, it still didn't feel like it was impacting me, even though it was.
Yeah.
Here, I feel a part of it, and I feel like, oh, if I had something to include or say, people would be like, oh, you know. And we do. We all talk, and it's that way, and I really like that.
Yeah, I think we're super lucky as a group. And we're pretty picky about our, you know, who we hire. You know, it's not just like a body, in other words.
No,
you know,
definitely
we need
not
a person who's going to kind of own it, like, and feel committed, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's what we've had that's kept this group kind of strong throughout.
No, I mean, everyone here is amazing. I don't have enough positive things to say about the people I work with. And when I started, I was pretty overwhelmed, just because when you start anywhere new, it's overwhelming. And you're in a new place, and you're in a new hospital, and you have a new EMR to learn. And as I've gotten more comfortable, I used to complain about work. I don't complain about work anymore.
Yeah, good. And that's nice.
Isn't it? It's so nice. Yeah. I like go home and I tell stories, but I don't complain about something that happened or someone who wasn't pulling their own weight and doing the job that needs to be done. And so I enjoy coming to work every day, even though it's work.
Yeah. And you know, when you just said that about pulling your own weight, I think that is another good thing in our program that may be different than how it's done in some, but also contributes to sort of the satisfaction of doing this job, which is that we have two lists, and one is for the ICU, one is for the floor patients, but we all see them all. We're assigned to a list when we get there. Like you and I have been on the floor list, the Mitchell list all week. But when we're done with ours, we click over to the other one. And if there are still patients to be seen or a bunch of new consults being put on, we all do them
we
all.
Help
Nobody's
each other out.
Like, my list is done, I'm done.
Oh, that's not my job. I'm not doing that. No,
nope, we're all doing it.
And I don't think that that attitude belongs in medicine. And sadly, I think it is quite prominent. And we are very lucky that here it's like, okay, we finished our work for the day. What else needs to
Let's
be done?
Let's see what my partners need.
It's all the same team, and I think it's so easy because I think many hospitals split things into teams. I don't think we're unique in that, but I think that a lot of places don't remember that even though, okay, we're focused on this and they're focused on that, we all are accomplishing the same goal.
One thing about the schedule that I've noticed in recent years is that the medical residents in training now are not shy about calling in sick or even occasionally for a mental health day. What this means is that, at least for me, I can't depend on them too much to help manage the service. And while there is definitely an ethos inherent in the older generation of physicians, a kind of toughness maybe, who would not and could not have called in sick during training, I'm not sure that it is wise or even ethical to force people who are unwell to work. Yet the model of healthcare delivery is based on maximal efficiency with no redundancies. We certainly felt this during the COVID pandemic, even though fortunately we did fairly well as a group with no one going down too hard or for too long. I don't know what the best solution is, but it often feels a little too marginal for safety. I've been your host, Jennifer Jones, giving you a peek into the secret life of neurohospitalists. Thanks for listening, and thanks to my excellent colleagues for supporting this project.